Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome, my friends, to this Monday edition, September 26, 2022. This Monday edition of the Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman. I want to thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform, in me, in myself, Eric the Tech, the product that we bring to you, the information we bring to you. I want to thank you so much for tuning in and sharing this broadcast with others on your social media, you're with your neighbors, your boss, your friends, your coworkers, your family, your kids. Hey, thank you so very much. Really appreciate that. And please continue to do so. Now, with that, I just want to make a somewhat of, an announcement. I don't want to make a big deal of this. All right. I really don't. So you may have noticed some inconsistencies with our programming, with the guest lineup, with different things taking place. That's because of me. And I just want to let you know that I'm having some health issues that require some attention. And by attention, I mean both treatment, testing, more treatment, more testing, and other things. Having said that, that has put our schedule of guests in kind of a rather untenable position, because a lot of times, because of the different time zones or because of the different days, I am required not to be here. I'm required to be elsewhere. It's just not working out. So what we're going to do, what we're doing right now, and I've shared this with, our regular guests, they're going to be with us once a month, okay? Again, because of the when I record this program, it may be extremely late or extremely early, but certainly not consistent with the schedule of our guests. So I just want to let you know that now they're folks, it's non-life threatening, and it has nothing to do, although that's coming with my busted up jaw. I wish it was limited to that, but it's not. So again, just to be clear, I just want to let you know that I, because of my medical treatment schedule, testing, and other things, we're going to have to move guests to the regular guests to once a month. Occasionally, I'll have guests on that are able to record at very odd times that would be ordinarily inconvenient or even impossible because of other people's shows with our regular guests. So don't read anything into that. It's just the way it is. And again, it's because of my issues, my health issues, that I've got to get addressed. Non-life-threatening, but I wanted to put that out there as an announcement. Hopefully that made it clear. All right. Eric the Tech, it's Monday. How are you, sir? You doing well?
Doing good.
All right. And Eric the Tech, I've inconvenienced him as well. And he is, I am currently inconveniencing him. And of course, that is, sorry about that, but no, he's very good about it, and I appreciate everything he does, and I appreciate your understanding as well. All right, now, and that change will be for the foreseeable future, or until I'm in the clear. All right. Now, folks, I'm going to draw your attention. I got a packed show for you. A lot of information today, a lot of subjects to cover. We made it through the weekend, didn't we, right? Well, part of, you've got to take a look at the different things that are taking place in order to understand what is meant by, hey, things are going to be happening on certain days and certain time, or certain days, certain periods. I want to take you back to this program a month ago, almost to the day a month ago. Aaron Brickman was on. The title of the, well, Aaron Brickman was on with Steve Quayle, and then Aaron Brickman was on again in an overdrive session, if you will, with me in extremely important program about what is happening economically here. The subjects I'm going to cover is from economics to international events to Biden's war in this growing national police state, the fact that this is staggering and all of the components therein, to the culture rot, the Biden crime family, and also the ARPA and AI aspects of things. So there's a lot to cover. But first, this. Aaron Brickman was on the show August 25th of this year. And we were talking about patterns, pattern recognition, as it applies to the economy. We were talking about, for example, we were talking about the different cycles. There's a 40-year cycle and a 90-year cycle that has to do with a number of things, including, believe it or not, Jewish holy days, lunar cycles, planetary cycles. It was really an interesting and in-depth program. He made a comment, and I received a tremendous number of emails over the last 48 hours from listeners and viewers about his analysis of where the stock market, where the Dow would close on September 23rd, this past Friday. Folks, please listen and watch this, because this is so critically important to what comes next for all of us. And I'm going to get into what undergirds all of this. But please take a listen to segment one in the pro. And by the way, folks, all of the show notes, the citations, the source material is located at HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com. Under today's show title, all you have to do is open up the show box, and there it is, only at HagmanReport.com. Will you find the citation links and so on? So let's go to video 7, segment number 1. This is Aaron Brickman on August 25th, a month ago, when the stock market, when the Dow was at 33,000 plus. Okay, at that time. Here he is, segment 1.
Dear, this year is more perfect than 2008. This thing is shaping up to be almost identical. In fact, it's almost identical to 1929 on the calendar. Okay, even the solar eclipses and lunar eclipses are in identical positions that they were at in 1929. Okay. So what does that look like this fall? What it looks like this fall is we have either topped on August 16th, where we are going to top very shortly. There will be a very scary down move that will commence. That down move should be done by September 23rd. Okay. When I say, and we should get on the Dow back down to the June lows. We should go back down to 29,500. Okay. And we should be there, in the next 3-4 weeks.
Okay. That was Aaron Brickman saying 29,500. So page A, under those two segments, page A from Friday, Dow drops nearly 500 points to close at new low for 2022 on rising recession fears. He nailed it. He absolutely nailed where it was going to close on Friday. Based on his analysis of both 90 and 40-year cycles, as well as other events. This is not, has nothing to do with Kabbalah, Gematria, has nothing to do with astrology, has nothing to do with any of that. And for those that program on August 25th, you folks, you can see where he's getting his information from. There's links there to papers, white papers, and some other material. So what we saw was a dramatic drop. In fact, the lowest rate or the lowest value. New low for 2022 last Friday with the Dow, as he stated a month prior. So where do we go from here? Let's take a look. Ask Aaron, where do we go from here? This is segment two from the same broadcast a few minutes later. What can we expect economically? What can we expect with respect to IRAs? What can we expect with the stock market? Where is it going to go? Is it going to rise? Is it going to fall? Here's what he said.
29, because you're an idiot if you start talking about 1929 in regards to stock market crashes. That is like comparing a baseball hitter to Babe Ruth. You don't do stuff like that. It shows your ignorance of baseball and what Babe Ruth accomplished. So having said that, I will say this. This year, if we crash, will be as big as 1929. Okay. The markets are showing that this thing has the makings of seeing a 40 to 50 to 60% drop in the stock market. A complete wipeout. Okay. To put that into context, if we crash this year, I would not be surprised. You see the stock market. The stock market right now is in like the 33,000s. Check that. Yep, 33,118. I would not be surprised by November to see the stock market at 15,000.
15,000. Now, you may think, well, I don't have any money invested in stocks. I don't either. I don't have a 401k. I don't either. But this affects all of us. The economic part of this affects all of us. And I'm telling you right now, we're in for a very bumpy ride economically. And if you look at previous, you know, past history, and if you understand history, and you look at the different cycles and how war factors in, take a look at the international implications here. Take a look when you go back into the 19, well, you can go back into the different time periods from really going all the way back to 1842 and 1932, going back to 1942 and 1982 for the different cycles. Look at how war factors in as well. So there's some international implications there. And of course, the push for a digital currency. Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. I'd love to get him back on. Hopefully that'll happen. Again, schedule-wise, it's just it's very, very, very difficult, but no worries. All right. Where to even start, right? Where to even start? I think I'll start here. One of the most important issues that I hope everyone realizes is the midterms coming up. I guess the first question is, are we going to have midterms? And because people think this is a foregone conclusion, yes, we'll have midterms. And not only are we going to have midterms, but we're going to, the conservative Republican political ideology, we're going to wipe out the left. That's the consensus. If you look at everywhere, if you talk to people, that's what everyone is expecting. But what happens if that doesn't happen? What happens if, well, there's a repeat of 2020? because right now there's a fight on to keep 2020, the theft of 2020 down. You can't even talk about it. In fact, if you do, America's growing national police state, this police force, they're coming after you. You post something on Facebook, they're coming after you. You're an election denier. Or again, the censorship as well as the weaponization of the Department of Justice and FBI. Hey, if you're an election denier, or if you are a vaccine denier, or COVID treatment denier with alternative treatments, you're a target. With the January 6th committee coming back in now, this week, folks, please understand one thing. The arrests have not even begun. I mean, when I'm saying arrests, I am talking about arrests of people who have are completely innocent. We still have, the political prisoners, January 6th prisoners in the DC gulags. We have political prisoners today. There will be more arrests coming. Now, why do I say this? I want to turn to, and again, I might be going out of order here, and I apologize, Eric the Tech, because that makes him work like three times as hard, but I'm going to go to video A2 in the Dropbox that I have. This is 60 minutes from yesterday. Okay, now, you may have heard this, friends, family members, coworkers at the water cooler may be talking about this. My goodness, the phone calls from the White House to the insurrectionists on January 6th. And this is based in part on the fruits of Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, his cell phone records. And a man who is working for the January 6th committee, who asked for $3.2 million to conduct his investigation, but didn't get that, only got a little bit, but Meadows turned over what was needed. This 60 Minutes piece is one of several that will show you, kind of give you an idea of where all of this is headed. So there's going to be more commentary after this. But watch this. This is from yesterday. This is 60 Minutes. This is a man who is working for the January 6th committee. And this is a man who's telling you that Donald Trump and everyone in the White House is an insurrectionist and should be charged with and tried for treason and sedition. And of course, all of you and I. Now, you already know this, but understand, this is what's going out to your friends, your family, your boss, or whoever, people you see in the grocery store. This is what they're listening to. This is what they are seeing. This is what, this is a big part of the show trials, but the show that will kick off what's going to happen from now to the midterms, if we have them, and from the midterms to the general. This kind of lays a foundation, and the suggestive criminality by this individual. Again, suggestive criminality, not proved, but suggested, is beyond the pale. Watch this.
And, you know, when you have the White House switchboard and certain other cell phone numbers connected to Bianca Garcia, that is a link that needs to be investigated. The thread that needs to be pulled is identifying all the White House numbers and why we have certain specific people, why they were talking to the White House.
Specific White House phone records are kept secret to protect every administration. But in his book, The Breach, Riggleman wrote he begged the committee to push harder to identify numbers that showed up on the monster.
I was one of those individuals, sadly, at the beginning, you know, where I was very, very aggressive about these link connections, getting those White House phone numbers.
Did you express those concerns to the committee at the time?
Yes.
What was the response?
The response was, go forth and just do the best you can with the resources that we have.
Riggleman requested $3.2 million, but only received a fraction of that. His team burrowed into the data. The mother load dropped into their laps, not just phone records, but more than 2,000 actual texts to and from Mark Meadows, former President Trump's chief of staff. There were numbers, but no names. So, Riggleman told us, his team made a giant spreadsheet, painstakingly identifying the people behind each number. And when they did, they were privy to the real-time thoughts of Trump family members, former cabinet secretaries, members of Congress, conspiracy mongers, even a Supreme Court justice's wife.
You've called the texts from President Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, the crown jewels. Why?
It was a roadmap. You know, it showed actually the evolution of the beginning arguments from alternate electors all the way through rally planning, all the way to day of. It showed conspiracy theories. It showed the saturation of QAnon.
How'd you get him?
He gave him up.
Do you think it was a mistake?
You know, if you go back to the simplest explanation, I think he wanted to give up some of his text messages. By the way, this is a caveat. We don't know if we got them all. But what we got is pretty valuable.
You have said these texts provide irrefutable, time-stamped proof of a comprehensive plot at all levels of government to overturn the election. Irrefutable.
Early in the text messages, they were talking about alternate electors, you know, I think as soon as November 5th or November 6th.
Right off the bat.
Come on. Right off the bat.
All right. That was Denver Riggleman, an investigator for the January 6th committee, excited the fact that he received the text messages from Mark Meadows, as I explained going into this, showing White House communications to others, talking about, oh, the horror, alternate electors. But when you dig deeper into this, it's talking about the fact that, hey, wait a second, there's something wrong with the election results. They stopped the counting, and pursuant to the Constitution of the United States, we have an alternate set of electors ready to go, how to proceed. Everything that we're seeing right now hinges upon the election, the election of this past presidential election, but the destruction of America First. Okay, when you look at everything through the lens of the Great Reset and the destruction of America First, anything America First, then you can understand how big, how wide, how deep, and how strong this movement is to impeach the people who are truly patriotic, to impeach Christian conservatives, but just not to impeach them, to jail them, to silence them, and to get them out of the way by any means necessary. Now, to show you that there is absolutely nothing wrong with questioning the legitimacy of the elections. There is, in fact, it's necessary to do so to show you that, well, to further, I suppose, expose the weaponization of the Garland Department of Justice backwards to the corruption, in my view, of Bill Barr, the attorney general, former attorney general, now speaking circuit, you know, yucking it up, of course, saying that, I didn't see any evidence of any kind of election problems. When you take a wide swath of time, for example, 22 years, go back to 2000. And you take a look at all of the elections from 2000 to the present, and that includes some midterms, and especially the midterm of 2018. That's very specific and that's very important. But watch the left, the embedded communist left, watch what they did, what they said, and listen to their words about each election where they lost since 2000. Now, I will admit 2000 is an outlier because of the Supreme Court involvement, hanging chads, Florida. I understand that. Okay. I fully get that. But when you take this as a whole, look at this from a cruising altitude, what do you see? You see the objections on the left, the objections by the communists. I'm not going to even call them Democrats anymore. By the communists who have infiltrated our system, talking about our elections, talking about how illegitimate everything is, and how illegitimate President Trump is and was, or was, and still is. This is not just about the man. This is about the movement. So let's go back. This will be video number 9 in the show notes. Let's go back and take a look from 2000 until today. Now, Eric, the tech, these are out of order. The segments are properly marked, but time-wise, they're out of order. And these segments are brief. Most of them are brief. I think the longest one is a minute and a half. But let's go to segment 1 from this source video. Go ahead. Oh, okay. This will be segment number 1. Now, this is about the 2000 election. It's not, and again, I understand about the Supreme Court involvement, but listen to what happens on the floor, in the chambers of the Capitol. Listen to what was happening in the chambers of the Capitol. Here's segment number 1 from 2000.
Florida, where you and others participated in what I call the United States coup d'etat.
There's no doubt in my mind that Al Gore was elected president.
I rise to object to the fraudulent 25 Florida electoral votes.
I must object because of the overwhelming evidence of official misconduct, deliberate fraud, and an attempt to suppress voter turnout.
It is signed by myself on behalf of my diverse constituents and the millions of Americans who have been disenfranchised by Florida's inaccurate vote count.
The Supreme Court, not the people of the United States, decided this election.
Speaking to a Democratic group in Chicago Tuesday, he made it clear he thinks Al Gore was the winner.
By the time it was over, our candidate had won the popular vote, and the only way they could win the election was to stop the voting in Florida.
Catherine Harris.
Wow. Does any of that sound familiar? Stopping the vote, project much? Or maybe consulting their own playbook and applying it to that election? Again, I fully understand the nuances of the 2000 election. I'm not saying that. I want everyone to look at the reactions by these communist leftists embedded in our political system and what they said, or the brainwashed and or useless idiots, what they said and how they said it. So you saw that from 2000. What about 2004? Let's take a look at what happened. Again, 2004, this is out of the mouths of the people on the left or the communist left. Here it is.
Shifting vote tallies in Ohio and malfunctioning electronic machines, which may not have paper receipts, have led to additional loss of confidence by the public.
The right to vote has been stolen from qualified voters.
In 2004, the democratic process was thwarted.
The 2004 presidential election in Ohio was riddled with unnecessary problems.
Some machines malfunctioned, causing votes to be counted more than once, or not at all.
Based upon an inordinate number of allegations suggesting gross voting rights violations and misconduct, I join with my colleagues in objecting to counting the state of Ohio's electoral votes.
As in 2000, the votes of many who wanted to vote were not, in fact, counted.
This last Friday night, I arranged to meet Senator Kerry at a fundraiser to give him a copy of my book. He told me he now thinks the election was stolen.
The wife of John Kerry said she has lingering doubts about the legitimacy of the election. Her theory goes like this. Two brothers, she calls hard right Republicans, own 80% of voting machines in the U.S. Therefore, it would be easy to hack into the mother machines that control the electronic voting.
There were.
All right. Let's see. Easy to hack machines. All right, let me write that down. Easy to hack machines. It's all about the machines. The voting machines are the problem. Nancy Pelosi was talking about it. 2004, hey, we have a problem with the voting machines. Oh, how things change, right? Yet, were they silenced? Were they censored? Were they considered to be pariahs in their own communities? No, they were celebrated. They lost and they blamed it on the machines. I said, it's the machines. How about the governor's race in Florida and Georgia? Can you imagine, by the way, instead of DeSantis having Andrew Gillum in Florida as governor, he was found, of course, in a hotel room, cocained up, passed out, I think nude with, I believe it was a male escort. That's, wow. Okay, so think about the midterms, 2018 midterms. What happened then? Who was speaking about the 2018 midterms? And again, you might think, well, I know this. Well, you know what? A lot of people don't remember. A lot of people don't remember yesterday, but a lot of people don't remember what happened. I want you to take a look at this next segment. This is specifically about the midterm state races, specifically Florida and Georgia. I could take it state by state. I could play you these all day long, but I condensed it just down in this about a minute and 50 seconds. Here it is.
Election stealing.
And despite the final tally and the inauguration and the situation we find ourselves in, I do have one very affirmative statement to make. We won.
Without voter suppression, Stacey Abrams would be the governor of Georgia. Andrew Gillum is the governor of Florida.
I acknowledge that former Secretary of State Brian Kemp will be certified as the victor in the 2018 gubernatorial election. This is not a speech of concession.
If she'd had a fair election, she already would have won.
You refuse to concede and say that you lost. Do you stand by that decision today?
Absolutely. The election was not fair. The process was not fair.
If Stacey Abrams doesn't win in Georgia, they stole it. It's clear. It's clear.
I think that Stacey Abrams' election is being stolen from her.
You notably did not concede.
I did not.
Okay, you acknowledged that he won, but you did not concede.
Correct.
5 months later, do you still feel like your opponent won through voter suppression?
Yes. Georgia voters did not have their votes counted. They were not allowed to cast votes. They had their votes discarded.
She would be the governor of Georgia today had the governor of Georgia not disenfranchised 1.4 million Georgia voters before the election. That's what happened to Stacey Abrams. They took the votes away.
Was the election in Georgia statewide a free and fair election?
It was not a free and fair election.
Reminder.
All right. And again, the source video, HagmanReport.com. Now, you heard that. And of course, Stephen Colbert, he gives the same time and the same deference to the legitimacy of the 2020 election as he did the 2018 election, right? Oh, no, he doesn't. Of course not. But you see how this is being handled, right? How this has been handled. So what you saw just now, the 2000 election, the 2004 election, where fraud and the machines were blamed, the electronic voting machines were blamed for the fraud. The 2018 state election, specifically Florida and Georgia. Now, let's take a look at what happened in the 2020 election. The same source video, essentially the same group of leftist communist people embedded in this country. Let's take a look at their reactions to 2020. This is segment 4 from video 9. Go ahead.
You can run the best campaign. You can even become the nominee. And you can have the election stolen from you.
How can you win with Russian interference, though?
That's the real thing.
That's what I'm scared about in 2020.
But rightly.
Because I think he's an illegitimate president that didn't really win. So how do you, you know, fight against that in 2020?
You are absolutely right.
He's an illegitimate president in my mind.
Would you be my vice presidential candidate? Folks, look, I absolutely agree.
Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put in the office because the Russians interfered.
Trump knows he's an illegitimate president.
The president-elect, although legally elected, is not legitimate.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
You said you believe that Russia's interference altered the outcome of the election.
I do. We have a president who, if in fact it is proven, has been assisted by the Russians and may in fact not be a legitimate president.
The one thing that Trump is fearful of when it comes to his being president is that finally we will see how illegitimate his victory actually was.
I have an objection.
I object to the 15 votes from the state of North Carolina.
I object because people are horrified.
He's an illegitimate president.
Do you believe Trump is a legitimate president?
What I believe is that there's no question that the outcome of this election was affected by the Russian interference.
But there absolutely is a cloud of illegitimacy.
So that legitimacy is in question, yes.
So that was a very...
Notice how all the talking points now are the same. So I just walked you through two plus decades of election information about the left, about the communists, what they're doing, what they have done, I should say, declaring the elections illegitimate, declaring the machines fraudulent, and crying voter suppression. But most importantly, in that last video, the 2016 election, declaring President Trump an illegitimate president and objecting on the congressional floor, saying, okay, wait, we can have essentially alternate electors. And this is why, I should add, this is why the left, the communist left, they need to get rid of the Electoral College. That's what, according to the left. We need to get rid of the Electoral. No, and hell no. But that's what they want to do. They want to blame the Electoral College, that process, the antiquated Electoral College, as part of the reason that part of the reason for illegitimacy. But notice the left again, that their talking points, they're allowed to say the machines without getting sued into oblivion. They're allowed to use pejoratives against people like Mike Lindell and people like, all others, saying they're conspiracy nuts and kooks and quacks and all of that. Without censorship. Yet when we raise issues about the legitimacy of the 2020 election, we get just hammered. Now, it wouldn't be fair, it wouldn't be fair to play, not to play this. There were protests and objections that disrupted the final count of electoral votes. And this is the footage from this is congressional footage of the Capitol for the election that preceded, or I'm sorry, for the 2016 election that where President Trump was voted in. So watch this again. Relatively the same objections made by the right were made by the left in 2016. You follow me? In other words, the people who were objecting in, or it was okay to object in 2016, but not in 2020. Here's some footage from 2016. Go ahead and run, this will be video 8.
I wish to debate. I wish to ask, is there one United States senator who will join me in this letter
there
of objection?
There is no debate. There is no debate.
That's one.
The gentlewoman will suspend. The chair has previously ruled a signature from a senator is required. Objection cannot be received. Mr. Blunt.
Mr. President, the undersigned, Roy Blunt and Amy Klobuchar, tellers on the part of the Senate, Greg Harper and Robert A. Brady, tellers on the part of the House of Representatives, report the following as the result of the ascertainment and counting of the electoral vote for President and Vice President of the United States for the term beginning on the 20th day of January, 2017.
The state of the vote for President of the United States as delivered to the President of the Senate is as follows. The whole number of electors appointed to vote for President of the United States is 538, of which a majority is 270. Donald Trump of New York has received for President of the United States 304 votes. Hillary Clinton, the state of New York, has received 227 votes.
Now, in the interest of time, I'm not going to run the entire video. Again, HagmanReport.com, two ends on Hagman. You can find the source of video there. Now, there were disruptions over the final count of the electoral votes. Hey, we object to this. That's the left saying, we object to Donald Trump. We want our electors in. But when we did it in 2020, no. You're not allowed to do that in this last election. We're not allowed to do that. The left can do whatever the hell they want, but we can't do it. And if we do such a thing, then what happens is a weaponized Department of Justice and FBI will come after all of us, from President Trump to everyone who took part in this insurrection, right? Because by their definition, everyone who got up there and said something and saying, no, this is not right, they're insurrectionists, they're seditionists by their own rules. So what happened? Let me ask you this. Everyone is talking about January 6th, the Capitol building, and how it was just this Pearl Harbor 9/11 event. You've seen the footage, right? You've seen it all. The only people to have died at the Capitol, Ashley Babbitt, okay, another woman, did so at the hands of the opposition. The case of Brian Sicknick, that is not a police officer being killed by blows from a fire. That's not factually correct, no matter how hard that the left wants you to believe that. Was there violence, smashing of windows on January 6th? Yes, but there are also a hell of a lot of questions regarding that and a lot of federal involvement. Remember, they have had roughly 20 years. If you look back at this, at those videos, they've had 20 years to weaponize, and that includes the Bush years, to weaponize the Department of Justice and the FBI. So what happened when President Trump was inaugurated? Let's take a look at video A1. Here it is. Go ahead and play it. listeners, radio listeners, January 20th, 2017.
Police had to push back the protesters so firefighters could get to the flames. Small fires had appeared all day. This upped the temperature, which of course was the point.
One demonstrator threw a flashbang grenade back at police. It exploded in an officer's face.
Plenty of tear gas. Six officers reportedly injured.
They will destroy your limo. You need to leave now.
AK-47, put the cops in piggy heaven.
I could go on and on and on. You get the idea. You saw the violence. You saw the hatred. You saw the smashing, the looting, the destruction of property. And this was not confined necessarily to Washington, D.C. This was in all, many, I'm not going to say all, but many of the large cities in the across the United States on Inauguration Day. By the left. Oh, were there people hurt? Absolutely. Were there killings? Absolutely. As a result of this kind of rioting? Yes. Police were hurt. Bystanders were hurt. And participants were hurt. Some were killed. And you can research this yourself, what happened on the day of inauguration. And then following that, of course, what do we have? We had the red hat, the pink hat wearers, I shouldn't say red, but the pink hat wearers marching on Washington. How vulgar that was. And all of the vulgarity that happened as a consequence to that. All right. You may think I'm taking you down this lane for no reason. President Trump was in Youngstown, Ohio recently. And in the crowd, I'm not going to show you pictures because, again, we're very photograph and image or video laden today. So the crowd, they had, you know, their index finger up for number one, and they were number one to President Trump. That was during his speech, being number one. And of course the left went absolutely crazy saying, oh, look at, they're all doing Hitler salutes. They're all doing Hitler salutes. Let's go to video six. Hillary Clinton compares President Trump to Hitler. Let's play it.
Republican candidate, I worry about the, and it's no longer just the whiff of violence, but the appeals to violence that we saw on January 6th, but have seen and heard since then. I do. I worry about it a lot. You know, I remember as a young student, you know, trying to figure out how did people get basically drawn in by Hitler? How did that happen? And I'd watch newsreels and I'd see this guy standing up there ranting and raving and people shouting and raising their arms. I thought, what's happened to these people? Why did they believe that? You saw the rally in Ohio the other night. Trump is there ranting and raving for more than an hour, and you have these rows of young men with their arms raised. I thought, what is going on? So there is a real pressure, and I think it is fair to say we're in a struggle between democracy and autocracy. You know, I believe one of the reasons that Putin decided, what the heck, I'm going to go invade Ukraine, I can take them over, you know, in 3 or 4 days, is because
he assumed if Trump had been reelected, Trump would have pulled us out of NATO. And then Trump didn't end up back in the White House. And so Putin's saying, well, I can't wait. I'm not going to wait around. I'm going to do it because I am the.
How is that for some mental gymnastics? That about NATO, which may or may not have happened, but the mental gymnastics involved in that conclusion is strains credulity. But the fact of the matter is, you've got the same talking points as they, hey, if they're working, let's continue them. Of course, the Hitler salute, which it was absolutely, it didn't exist, did not exist. Yet she, Hillary Clinton, is, of course, pushing this narrative. And let's not forget the discredited and debunked, the real conspiracy theory of Russian collusion in the 2016 election backing President Trump has all been discredited. We know that. It's not true. So, okay, so what are they, what's next? Do we have them on the run? Are they afraid? Are people starting to wake up to this? What I just showed you, are people starting to say, wait a second, none of this makes any sense? Or these are all lies? Well, I think we can take some comfort. And I want to just give a shout out to my little sister, Karen in Rome. Georgia Maloney was, well, she won big in the Italian election. She will become the first female prime minister of Italy. She's a conservative nationalist. She's a Trumpette, if you will. And you can read about her in various locations, but I would suggest Conservative Treehouse and watch the videos. I'm not going to play the video because it's in Italian with subtitles in English. I'm not going to read the subtitles over the Italian audio. But this signifies a change in Europe. Things are beginning to change in the left. The communists are now getting extremely worried. Yes, in some cases, we have them on the run. And this, what's going on in Europe is one of the first cracks to appear. Right now, the headlines on the left and the talking points on the left, well, last time this happened was with Mussolini in Italy. She's being compared to Mussolini as Donald Trump is being compared to Hitler. What we're seeing now, and we can take some comfort in the fact, I believe, that we're seeing the left having a problem maintaining their grip on power because the people are beginning to see through all of the lies that I showed you during this program. So that's a good thing. So now what happens? Now what has to happen here? I began the show by talking about the economy, about Aaron Brickman absolutely nailing the fact that the Dow was going to hit below 30, in fact, go to 29.5, close at 29.5 on Friday the 23rd, and wouldn't you know it, that's exactly what happened, and him saying, okay, it's only going to get worse. Look for something that'll happen by orders of magnitude worse than 1929 with the economy. So at any given time, when the economy goes south, when the numbers, when they can't manage the numbers, the economy domestically, internationally, what happens? Wars break out, right? That happens. Well, let's go to video two, because Ukraine has a lot to, Ukraine is the money laundering operation for the bankers. It's number one. When you look at Ukraine, and again, This is not being an apologist for Putin. This is not being anything more than as factual as I can be, as analytical as I can be. What's happening now? The left, the globalists, I shouldn't say the left, the globalists, which are the communists here, they've got to what? They've got to engage in war. Some say this is a distraction away from the economic events, or this is this will usher in a new currency. That's certainly possible. This will hide the crimes of the communists. Again, in Ukraine, I cannot stress this enough, is the oligarchs' monetary laundering, money laundering, the oligarchs' money laundering system. So let's go to video number two. This is Jake Sullivan telling you and me yesterday on one of the Sunday shows, saying, you know what? We are just pushing all sorts of money and weaponry into Ukraine. Why? Well, this is ostensibly to fight against the bad Russians taking over Ukraine. That's, and again, I'm not sticking up for Putin, but when you understand where and how, for example, how this whole Ukraine mess began, it didn't begin just several months ago. This began earlier this century and was propelled as well with the Maidan Revolution and all sorts of things. You've got to know history. But where are we at now? What are we funneling into Ukraine? Let's take a look at video two. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan boasting about the weapons going into Ukraine.
We turn now to White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Good morning to you, Jake. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
President Zelensky told us that if this annexation happens, it will make diplomatic talks with Vladimir Putin impossible. They need artillery in Ukraine, he says, more air defense systems and tanks. Will they get it? And how significant of an escalation is this?
Well, Margaret, not only will they get it, but they've been getting it. The United States at this point alone has provided more than $15 billion in weapons, and that's included air defense systems, hundreds of artillery pieces, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of rounds of artillery. And we facilitated the transfer of tanks from NATO allies who have the Soviet-era tanks that the Ukrainians have trained on. We will continue to do all of that. And what Putin has done is not exactly a sign of strength or confidence. Frankly, it's a sign that they're struggling badly on the Russian side. And we are going to help the Ukrainians be able to take advantage of the gains they've made and to continue to push back against the Russian forces that are brutally occupying portions of their country.
Yesterday, Putin replaced one of the top logistics generals with a man who's known as the Butcher of Mariupol. Are we seeing the beginning of the collapse of the Russian army?
I think it's too soon to make comprehensive predictions like that. I think what we are seeing are signs of unbelievable struggle among the Russians. You've got low morale where the soldiers don't want to fight. And who can blame them? Because they want no part of Putin's war of conquest in their neighboring country. You've got Russia having depleted its stores of precision-guided munitions. You've got Russia disorganized and losing territory to a capable Ukrainian force. And you've got a huge amount of infighting among the Russian military leadership, and now the blame game has started to include these replacements. So Russia is struggling, but Russia still remains a dangerous foe and capable of great brutality, as we've seen with these mass graves outside of Izium. So we continue to take that threat seriously, and we continue to see our obligation being providing Ukraine all that it needs to be able to effectively defend itself and defend its country and defend its freedom. That's what we're intent on doing, and we are not taking our eye off the ball.
Okay, and you can cut it right there. And folks, I would urge you to watch the entire video. Look, we've given more money, more arms to Ukraine than you can imagine. Do we have any business doing that? And more importantly, why? I mean, why are we doing that? Why? Couple of things, including a response from Sergey Lavrov, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Russian Federation. This was at the UN this past week. Listen to what he says in response to what's going on with respect to NATO, with respect to, with respect to Ukraine in general, but specifically how the U.S. and the West, what they are doing in Ukraine. Again, I'm not deifying Russia, their politicians, or Putin, or even Lavrov. I'm not doing that. I'm just giving you the facts. You decide. And you take a look and compare the events, compare the possibility of nuclear war. Remember in that former video, in that other video, wasn't it Hillary who said, well, the reason Putin didn't attack or invade Ukraine was because, Trump was in on it. Trump was his buddy. How does that even work? Again, it strains credulity, and you've got to make some really crazy intellectual jumps in order to really understand. But let's hear from Sergey Lavrov at the UN so you know what Russia is not just thinking, but what Russia is telling the public. Here it is.
Madam President, distinguished colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, we are meeting at a dramatic moment. The crises are growing, and the situation in the area of international security is deteriorating rapidly. Instead of having an honest dialogue and looking for compromises, what we're dealing with is disinformation, course stagings and provocations. The Western line here undermines the trust in international institutions as bodies where interests are agreed. It also undermines trust in international law as a guarantee of fairness and protecting the weak against the strong. The negative tendencies we're witnessing within the UN in a concentrated fashion too. At the UN, which rose from the rubble of German fascism and Japanese militarism and was created to develop friendly relations amongst its members and to prevent conflict among them. The future of the world order is being decided today, and it is clear to any impartial objective. The question is whether or not it is going to be the kind of order with one hegemon at the head of it, making everyone else living, following his notorious rules of benefit to that hegemon only, or are we going to have a democratic, fair world without blackmail and without setting fear into the unwanted without neo-Nazism and neo-colonialism? We made a firm choice for the latter, and together with partners and like-minded people, calling upon everyone to work for its implementation. What is receding into the past is a unipolar model of world development which served the interests of the one golden billion, and its overconsumption level came from the resources of Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Today, we're witnessing sovereign states ready to defend their national interests, and this results in the creation of an equal, socially oriented, and sustainable multipolar architecture. But the objective geopolitical processes are being seen by Washington and fully subjugated to it. The elites of Western countries are considered by them as a threat to their dominating position. The United States and allies want to stop the march of history. So at some point in the past, declaring that they were victorious in the Cold War, Washington erected themselves into an almost envoy of God on earth, without any obligations, but only the sacred right to act with impunity wherever and wherever they want. And this can be done anywhere against any state, especially if they're somehow displeased, the self-proclaimed masters of the world. And we do recall the wars of aggressions very far from American shores in Yugoslavia, in Iraq and Libya, which claimed many hundreds of thousands of peaceful lives. Were the truly legitimate interests of the West were impacted in any one of those countries? Was English banned or any other language of NATO countries banned there? Mass media, culture?
All right. He mentioned Libya, for example. And, of course, we know what Libya was about. We know that the takedown of Gaddafi involved a currency, didn't it? In the larger sense, it involved a currency. The only thing I've got to say to all of this is PNAC, Project for a New American Century. Remember the PNAC documents, the PNAC doctrine, where, look, we're going to put everyone, all countries, onto the same, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, the globalist system, especially the globalist monetary system. Wait, didn't I start this program out talking about the economy and about money? Okay. I was just asking. All right. Now we're going to go to video number 5. In the program description notes is the source video. Tom Fitton appeared with Eric Bolling. Eric Bolling, The Balance, on Newsmax TV to talk about Biden. And specifically Biden's business dealings, because I tossed out the accusations, didn't I, that this is about the oligarchs using Ukraine as their money laundering operation. All right, when you start connecting dots, think about American economy. Think about that 80% of the money in circulation was created over the last, 12 years or whatever. I mean, some insane number. Or think about how fast the debt has risen. And think about where we're headed economically as a country, but also as a world, especially with BRICS. Saying, you know what, the dollar, petrodollar, no thank you. We're going to base our system on a system of gold, the BRICS nations, and others joining the BRICS. So all wars are bankers' wars? Yeah, I kind of agree with that. But what about the crimes of the past? What about the crimes of the Biden family? Now, Biden, if you believe, as I do, that he was installed in the White House. He is being controlled. Obviously, he's not in control of anything, and that includes his own bodily functions. When you take a look at what's going on here, you can see with absolute clarity that what Biden did as vice president, Joe Biden, what Hunter Biden did as the vice president's son with Ukraine, especially with Ukraine. Of course, there's China and there's other concerns. But when you look at all of this, it's becoming clear that Ukraine all along has been this oligarch's playground. And they've got to destroy the evidence, whether it's the biolabs, whether it's the, regardless, they've got to destroy the evidence and push the, again, you heard it, this new world hegemony on the world. And they're using Ukraine as this lever to do so, or lever, depending on where you're from, to do so. Tom Fitton, again, had appeared with Eric Bolling to talk specifically about Hunter Biden and about Joe Biden, about the Biden family, and about Ukraine. Let's take a listen to this.
The minutes interview had more. Listen.
I love my son, number one. And no, there's not a single thing that I've observed at all from that would affect me or the United States relative to my son, Hunter.
Joining me now is the president of Judicial Watch and author of A Republic Under Assault, Tom Fenton. Tom, shocking. Listen, I know you love your son. Got it, Joe. But there are so many issues that are yet to be seen, whether or not he was colluding, whether he was making deals with foreign agents. What do you think, as someone who would know whether it was legal what Hunter was doing was?
Well, it was odd language, anything I've observed, which is a signal to the Justice Department, I'm not a witness. I've seen nothing. But of course, the documents and the laptop from you know where that Hunter left behind tell us otherwise. And of course, you have witnesses like Tony Bobulinski, who highlight the fact that Biden was a partner in this enterprise, certainly after he left office. And the documents show that despite his false statements to the contrary, he was a partner with them in business and used his office to help his son and presumably 10% for the big guy when certainly he was vice president.
You know, 10% big guy, yeah. But let's roll a soundbite of which I think is him. I think he didn't even realize he was incriminating himself, Joe Biden, as vice president. Take a listen.
I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired.
The prosecutor, Tom, was a prosecutor looking into Burisma, where Hunter Biden was getting an $83,000 a month check. And the father, the vice president, gets the prosecutor fired for the $1 billion handoff.
Yeah, remember they impeached Trump for daring to raise questions about it. So, and we had documents separately at Judicial Watch that the State Department had noted how the Russians were essentially trolling Biden over his anti-corruption work in Ukraine, given Hunter's connections to Burisma, and they were talking about how Burisma is the gift that keeps on giving. So there's no doubt that the Obama administration knew that Biden's son was in business and compromising our foreign policy abroad. And, you know, the question for Attorney General Garland is, Eric, where's the special counsel? How is it that his Justice Department, under the rules related to the special counsel, investigate these issues without there being a conflict of interest? And sure enough, it looks like the grand jury, supposedly, that's in place to investigate Hunter is pretty much dead.
Yeah, I'm not aware for of now. Any strong for now, I'll tell you what, though. Just wait till November. Wait till November when they get the gavel and subpoena power in the House and maybe the Senate. Could get a lot more interesting. Tom Fenton, always good having you on, my friend.
All right. Is that going to happen? Are they going to allow that to happen? That's my question to you. What do you think? Leave a comment, of course, at Rumble and Brighteon, either place. Leave a comment. What do you think? Do you think that they're going to allow the midterms to happen? And specifically, are they going to allow a takeover of House and Senate by the conservative right, I'm not saying Republicans, but by the conservative right? Are they going to allow that to happen? And if that does happen, what are they going to do? I'm going to tell you what they're going to do next. Stay right there with me. But before I go any further, you know, again, I started out the program by talking about money, about the economy, about the fact that, hey, you know what? Stock market closed at 29.5 as suspected. Hard times coming. So you want to prepare, right? You got to prepare yourself for what's coming. Part of the preparations that we do is we like to save money. I like to save money. And there are hidden costs of carrying balances on your credit cards, especially if you've got a high balance along with a high interest rate on your credit cards. Have you seen Have you been in that position where your credit cards just keep piling up and it seems like you go to pay them and you're not making a dent in the principal? It's all going to interest. Well, I've got a solution for you from my fine friends at Lightstream. Lightstream.com/Hagman. That's Lightstream.com/Hagman to fix that problem. My fine friends at Lightstream have developed this credit card consolidation loan, Lightstream.com/Hagman. They can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start 5.73% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. You know, the rate's fixed. It's not going to go up over the life of the loan. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000. There are no fees. You can get your money sometimes as soon as the same day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. We've used them with success. Because, yeah, we've been in that position. My family members recently have used them with great success, saving hundreds of dollars a month, which they have allocated into debt reduction as well as preparation. So go to Lightstream.com/Hagman. Again, just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to Lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman, and that's LightStream, Lightstream.com/Hagman. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply. And offers are subject to change without notice. Visit Lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman for more information. You're going to thank me later. You're going to be glad you did. Okay. We left off with the self-admission embedded in the video, or with the admission by Joe Biden embedded in the video of Tom Fitton. That admission took place on January 23rd, 2018. And he was bragging about the firing of the special prosecutor in Ukraine, thereby being able to let his son, Hunter, his brother, Jim, his sister, other family members take advantage of the money laundering operation that's taking place in Ukraine. Remember, all wars are bankers' wars. But Ukraine is especially important with respect to the oligarchs and the money that's going in and out of Ukraine. And I would also suggest to even the current money, who does that benefit? How about the current weaponry? Who does that benefit? And I take you back to PNEC. I take you back to the warmongers on both sides of the aisle. That's who that benefits. Now, what happens if one speaks out? Because we see a lot of things going on now. We see the economy teetering. We see inflation rising. We're seeing prices rise. We're seeing product in non-availability of certain products. We're seeing plants for food production plants blowing up or catching fire. Oil refineries blowing up. Not just in the United States, but all across the world. And it matches, the destruction of these facilities match what? They match the push for this global reset. So what happens when you speak out, for example, against things like Ukraine, like war, or even more precise, what happens when you address things like, hey, you know what? I'm not liking how the teachers are teaching our children. I don't like that. I don't like abortion, or I don't like infanticide. I'm going to speak out against infanticide. Or I'm going to, like Coach Dave Dobmeier does, and his team do, collectively and individually, they go to these abortion mills, these killing mills, Planned Parenthood, for example, and they stand and they attempt to counsel those walking into these particular buildings where the killing of the unborn take place. Well, there was a video in a story, a report that's been making its rounds this past weekend. The FBI raids the home of a Catholic pro-life speaker author with guns drawn as his terrified children watch. Now, if we can put page 3, again, this will be in the program description notes, but if we can go to page 3 and put that up on the screen. I saw this and I was horrified by this, because this is for speaking out against the murder of unborn children. This is for attempting to do what? To counsel those who are going in for a life-altering procedure for the mom, and, of course, life-killing, taking a life of the unborn child. So I saw this, and I thought, okay, you look at the weaponization of the Department of Justice. You look at the weaponization of the FBI. You've got a man, a very well-known pro-life author, a sidewalk counselor, and a father of 7 children. His crime, and his only crime, was to appear at an abortion mill with his 12-year-old son, and he was forced to endure time after time after time, him and his 12-year-old son. He was teaching his 12-year-old son the value of his actions, of what they were doing, and the fact that, hey, we're protecting the unborn, and his son was proud to be a part of this. The father was proud to be able to show him that this is what I do. His name is Mark Houck. He's the founder and president of the King's Men, which promotes healing for victims of pornography addiction and promotes Christian virtues among men in the United States and Europe. I mean, he's very well known. He's not a threat to anyone. Recently, the story goes, he and his son were at one of these locations, and an escort from the butcher mill shouted obscenities to his 12-year-old son. And you might say, well, you know, that's no place for a 12-year-old son or whatever. You know, whatever. What Mark Houck did was, when this escort, older man, got really in his son's face, he pushed that man away from his son. The man made it a point to apparently, and I say apparently because, again, these are allegations, to fall backwards as if he was pushed by, you know, the Incredible Hulk. What happened next? Oh, I don't know what happened. So, yeah, yes, you do. You had 25 to 30 FBI agents, heavily armed, swarming their property with around 15 vehicles at 7 in the morning, surrounding the house with rifles in firing position. They started pounding on the door and yelling for Mark Houck and his family to open the door. She came to the door. And there's the family on the screen there. She came to the door and said, look, please, I'm going to open the door, but please, my children are here. I've got 7 babies in the house. Suggesting that they weren't going to give them any problems. But they kept pounding and yelling and screaming. And I got to tell you, because of my position as an informational and operational asset with the FBI in years past, that's terrible. Believe me, that gets your attention. So Mark opened the door, they had the rifles pointed at Mark and pointed at his wife, and they went, cleared room to room to room to room. When they did go into the house, they ordered the children, again, pointing rifles, to stay upstairs. Now the staircase is open in their house, and the kids witnessed everything, not understanding. The smaller ones, the younger ones, not understanding. They were all screaming. It was frightening. It was traumatic. When they were at the house, the wife asked, "Why are you here?" They said, "We're here to arrest your husband." When she asked to see the warrant, they said they were going to take him whether they had a warrant or not. It wasn't until she said, "Wait a second, that's kidnapping. I want to see a warrant." It was only then when one of the agents agreed, walked to the vehicle, grabbed the warrant, and showed it to her. Mark asked his wife to get him a sweatshirt and his rosaries, obviously a Catholic, as I said. But when she returned with the sweatshirt and the rosaries, they already had them loaded up into the vehicle. They provided the first page of the warrant and said they were taking him to the federal building in downtown Philadelphia. After they took him, the traumatized children said, "Look, he's my best friend. He's my dad's my best friend." This is the weaponization. You disagree with the new world order reset, global reset, whatever we want to call it. You disagree with them. This is what's going to happen to you. This is what's coming after you. And I'm going to show you one last thing, because this is related to. If you've never heard of America's Mom, Sharona Bishop, look her up on Facebook, America's Mom, and then Sharona Bishop. The link will be in the program description box. You can see her Facebook page. You know how Steve Quayle speaks about the pukes in the pulpit. And in this case, pukes in the pulpit is an understatement. A supposed Christian church in Katy, Texas, featured a drag queen presentation. And you can see this on Libs of TikTok and other places, but Sharona Bishop's Facebook hasn't. But you can see other instances where churches are inviting these drag queens, these perverse drag queens into their churches. And the children, there's one video, and I'm not going to show it, but I saw a young child, couldn't have been more than 4 or 5, touch the crotch of a guy dressed in drag. And it's okay with the ministers, the priests, the ministers, I should say, and the congregants. But if you fight against this, like Mark Houck, expect to have your door busted in. Expect to be taken off to jail by a weaponized FBI. Expect to be charged with crimes, hate crimes, while you can have the leftists run over young people with their vehicles because of a political disagreement and either have no bail or post bail and walk the streets. This is what Biden has done. This is what the left has done, and this is what's going on every single day. And folks, it's only going to get worse, because the J6 committee meeting now again this week, more people will be arrested. There will be more pounding on the door by FBI agents, weaponized FBI agents. You can have several, 30, oh, go figure, 30 whistleblowers. It's not going to make much of a difference, because they're coming after you. Where is your line in the sand? We keep moving the lines in the sand. Where's your line in the sand? Would you allow your church, your child, to touch the crotch of a person in drag? You disagree. Hey, it's a hate crime. You could be taken off the jail. I hope that made sense to you. I really do. I want to thank you so much for your patience with me, your belief and your trust in this platform. And I want to thank all of everyone who's standing by me in this platform. May God bless. Good night.